Iambic Audiobooks presents Stealing Home, Book 3 of the Steel Chronicles, by Hayden Trenholm, read by Mark F. Smith. Chapter 1. September 21, 2044 was pretty much a typical Calgary Wednesday. Officially the last full day of summer, it dawned clear and cool with the promise of heat to come. I'd left the apartment early, wrapping up my first surveillance job for the Sing Steel Detective Agency. Nancy was still asleep, and I didn't wake her to say goodbye. That was my first bad decision of the day. It was hump day. You could see it in the faces of the people heading downtown on the Deerfoot, resigned to the work week but with a glimmer of hope for the coming weekend. PIs don't get weekends. Human venality never takes a holiday. I was still getting used to the fact that, after more than 35 years on the Calgary Police Force, I was now a private dick, with a license instead of a badge, receiving a commission instead of a salary. Not that I was complaining. Business was good, and Singh was paying his junior partner as much as I had made as a superintendent. With my disability pension from the city, I was making a living wage for the first time in a decade. Being flush wasn't the only thing I had to get used to. It had been a long time since I'd lived with a woman, and the last experience hadn't exactly ended well. Or the one before that. But when Nancy asked, I didn't hesitate. We'd had a rocky start, and I was a bit surprised she stuck with me after the way I treated her when Joshua was killed. It didn't even seem to bother her I was more than 15 years older and damaged in more ways than I have time to describe. Maybe as a top investigative reporter she was used to dealing with jerks. Or maybe she was tired of dating good-looking guys and decided to try the other side of the street. I'd learned a long time ago not to question too closely when fortune smiled on you, and she didn't leave when I took Singh up on his offer and had my destroyed left eye and arm replaced with high-end implants. The ear augment and vocoder came as part of the package. I could have settled for the cheap prosthetics my insurance plan provided, but I wasn't ready to live life at half speed, stuck behind a desk or spending my golden years in a home for broken cops. There are not a lot of women who would stand by their man when their man was becoming something other than human. I wasn't sure if you could call me Borg yet, despite my appearance. There's a lot more to being Borg than metal and glass. But part of me, the memories and traits I'd absorbed from my son when we were briefly joined inside Singularity House's computer, was already moving in that direction. Whether the rest would follow, only time could tell. When my lease expired at the end of July, I moved my stuff, 2 suitcases and the 6 boxes of books and mementos I deemed worth keeping, into her 3-bedroom condo overlooking Nose Hill Park. It was like coming home, the first real home I'd had in more than a decade. I spent most of August, while my surgeries healed, sitting on her balcony staring at the last piece of uncut prairie in Alberta. $100 billion worth of real estate set aside as a playground for gophers and coyotes by an ironclad bequest. Looking at it almost made me believe in people again. Not that I saw a lot of people. At the retirement party, everyone tells you they'll stay in touch, but after a month, you find out who your friends really are. Jim McConaughey and Lily Chin came by once a week or so, and Chief Arsenault actually came to see me twice in the hospital, which I think we both found pretty weird. As for the rest, a few get-well cards, an occasional message on my palm, all of which petered out after a month or two. If it hadn't been for Nancy, Singh, and my younger brother Mike, I'd have spent most of my recovery alone. It was tough when Mike left for Vancouver Island, but jobs teaching college don't come by that often, especially for a guy with his history. When my surgeries had healed, and the new improved me was ready for action, I took Singh up on his other offer and replaced Buzz Wanamaker as the new junior partner in his detective agency. The case I was working was pretty simple. One of Calgary's elite had violated her marriage contract and was secretly transferring joint assets into her new boyfriend's account. The husband didn't seem to care too much about the infidelity, but he was pissed about the fraud and hired us to get the goods on her. She must have thought being rich and a regular feature on the society feeds made her somehow immune. Tracking her movements, both physical and fiscal, was pretty much child's play, and I almost felt bad taking our client's money. But not so bad I didn't process the transfer. By 10 o'clock I had enough information for our client to start divorce proceedings and lay a private prosecution for embezzlement. I dropped the data cube off with Singh and picked up some Calibalt chocolates and tickets for the 7th and deciding game of the AAA playoffs. Nancy loved baseball almost as much as she loved sweets. Fully armed, I headed home to see if Nancy was still in bed, or was willing to go back to bed. Like most journalists, her office was her palm top, and unless there was a lead or an interview she had to follow up in person, she generally worked from home. So I was hopeful as the car pulled into the secure underground parking lot. I must have been pretty focused on my plans because I didn't really remember the drive home. There was no one at the security checkpoint on the way in. We pay a lot for the service and there's always supposed to be a live presence behind the glass. I have enough vices of my own that I don't begrudge a quick smoke break, but this was getting to be a regular event. I took a few seconds to register a complaint, then let the machine scan my prints and retina, and grabbed the elevator up to the 18th floor. Maybe it was nearly 4 decades of cop instinct. Maybe it was my enhanced Borg senses. As soon as our door keyed open, I knew something was terribly wrong. I stepped into the foyer and let the door slide shut behind me. My heart was pounding against my chest, and feedback from my optical implant told me my pupils were dilated. At some level, I was processing information my brain wasn't even aware it had yet. A sick mixture of fear and rage began to curdle in my gut. The electronic regulators I'd had added when they replaced my left arm kicked in, and I felt my heart rate stabilize. Extra oxygen was being pushed into my bloodstream, and my thoughts became clear and hard. It was the first time I'd felt the full effect of my Borg modifications, and if I hadn't been so upset, I might have been impressed. Nancy's breakfast dishes were still on the table at the far end of the large area that served as both living and dining room. The air filters hadn't yet removed the aroma of bacon and eggs. Their faint hum and the whisper of a news feed from Nancy's palm, sitting open beside the dishes, were the only sounds from inside the condo. The balcony door was open, and the faint sound of distant traffic mingled with the hush of the wind blowing over the open fields of Nose Hill. I didn't need to turn up the gain in my ear to know I was the only person in the place, and I didn't need to be an ex-police superintendent to know Nancy hadn't gone willingly. Her palm was open on the table, and that was the one thing she never left home without. I crossed to the table and dipped my finger in her coffee. It was still warm. She hadn't been gone for more than 20 minutes. I wanted to hit something, or someone, do anything but my job. Calm down, Frank. I took a deep breath and sat down in a dining room chair, the way they had taught me at anger management classes. Use your emotions to drive your actions, not control them. There are plenty of reasons why Nancy might have gone out without her palm. That was undoubtedly true. Then why couldn't I think of even one? At least, I was back to trying to think. I walked slowly through the rest of the condo. There was no sign of Nancy, and no sign of a struggle. The bed hadn't been made. She usually did that right after breakfast before she settled into work. Her pajama top was lying on top of the bed. She didn't wear bottoms, and her robe and slippers were in the bathroom. So at least I knew what she wasn't wearing. figuring out what was missing from her walk-in closet and wall-high shoe rack, was going to take a better detective than I had ever been. I preferred to think she had been dressed when she was taken. I went out on the balcony that ran the entire length of the apartment. One of the two wicker chairs had been knocked over, but whether by an intruder or by the wind was pretty much impossible to say. There was an earring beside the chair, and I bent down and picked it up. It was green, one of a jade pair I had given her for her birthday. If she had dropped it today, it meant she was probably wearing something that matched. Nancy was always careful that way. I slipped it into my pocket, trying not to think how it might have got knocked loose. My main contribution to the decor since I moved in was a row of flower boxes that hung over the side of the glass surround. Despite my allergies, I've always been a sucker for flowers. There was some dirt scattered on the floor near the closest box. I didn't think it had been there in the morning. There was a damp streak that ran from the fallen chair to the edge of the balcony. I dipped my finger in it and put it to my lips. Bitter, but not coffee. I looked over the edge of the balcony but didn't see anything unusual on the ground below, even using the zoom function. Of course, if you don't know what you're looking for, you can't know when you see it. I switched my eye into record mode for later reference. It still gave me the creeps that I could do that. There were half a dozen choppers flitting within my field of vision, not unusual for Calgary at this time of day. Most of them were unmarked corporate jobs, but I filmed them too, in case it came in handy later. There was probably more I could have done, but I was still getting used to the non-automatic capabilities of my implants. Not trying was the second bad decision of the day. I thought about calling in a missing persons report, but figured I would be better off going down to HQ. I had hunches, not evidence, and by my own estimate she'd only been gone 30 minutes, not the 24 hours the force insisted on before they would act. But I still had some friends downtown, and it was harder to say no to an ex-colleague face-to-face than it was over a cell. 35 years on the force had to count for something, didn't it? That's what comes from reading too many detective novels. I picked up Nancy's palm on the way out. One of her work files was still open. She'd been working on a story about complaints among the Borg that their access to the net was being interfered with. It was all I had. I closed the palm and shoved it in my pocket with the lost earring. I hesitated at the entrance. I went back to our bedroom and got my gun out of my sock drawer. Someone had taken my girl, and if they had hurt her, that someone was going to pay.